7th week birthday to my new nephew, Miles Escuder Haddis. They're shown with, as his dad, Scott, said, the kind of friends you don't have to stay away from. Well, we hope to make this world safer for you, Miles, and for everyone. And a very love-filled congratulations to Anna Escuder and Scott Haddis on the birthday of Miles. Happy birthday to Samin Farkindeh and Eli Putnam. Democracy Now! Is working with as few people on site as possible. The majority of our amazing team is working from home. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astu, Joe John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Adriano Contreras, Maria Tarasena. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up, stay tuned for the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
Morning.
Hey, you know, it's morning and it's election day. And all you people, all you people with your ballots who really want to vote, this is the day you have to take it down to the voting place. What is that, on Morrison?
Yeah, you don't have to take it there. You can take it to your library.
You can take it to the library. All right.
Yeah, and but it is on Morrison.
You want to do that because there's acres and acres of candidates and, you know, you should participate in the plowing of the acreage.
Yeah, there's so many candidates for mayor that I just voted for a bunch of them. I hope that'll work.
No. That would be a good idea. Multiple mayor city. They could have naked fights. Something that people would say.
Exactly. So it'd be a nightly broadcast. Celebrity mayor deathmatch.
Right, really. And they could all wear masks representing various comic book characters. It could be cool. Anyway, I think I have to tell people because they might think, what is this? This is KBOO 90.7 on your Portland radio dial, FM. And this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe over there, only he's not anywhere near me. And I'm Joe Uris, his partner on the air. And we will talk with you if you call in to the station at 231-8187. But I want to start with a little sad news. My mentor in medical sociology back way back when I was just beginning graduate school, a wonderful guy and a brilliant man, Mitch Greenlich, who has recently been a member of the legislature, has died. I don't say passed away because I don't know what is away, you know, into the ground, I don't know. Anyway, into ashes. Anyway, Mitch Greenlich has died. He is, for my mind, one of the great citizens of Portland, probably not appreciated enough. He can be irascible, he could be difficult, he could be challenging, he could be very rigid about things like vaccination, and he and I got into an incredible fight over fluoridation, but I've always respected his work, I respected his scientific methodology, and I really appreciated his bias towards science, as opposed to stupid, which is the way America seems to be going. So, I'm sorry to see you go, Mitch, and I wish your family really well, and I was very proud to have been one of your students you were a great mentor and you taught me a hell of a lot. Probably, as he turns over his grave, not enough, but I, you know, Mitch was a wonderful, wonderful person and a very, very bright man, and I will really miss him.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Well, it's for me a minor loss. You know, it was a long time ago that he and I were, that I was under his tutelage. But he has always impressed me as a very straightforward, even an angry spokesman for rational thought and for science. And I think that there are too few people like that, especially with this current crazy that's going on all over the United States and actually ruling in Washington. So here's a guy who is diametrically opposed to that kind of thing, who really did a good job. He did a great job as a medical sociologist, as a mentor, and as an administrator at Kaiser Research Foundation, and he was a really interesting and good legislator. Yes, he will be missed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, are we done? Are we ready to move on?
I think so. I think we're ready to move on. I just wanted to give a call out because, gee, he was a cool dude.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And at a time when we need champions of science and rationality, it's a shame to lose a good one. All right. As Joe mentioned, this is the Ava Joe Talk Radio program. We would love to hear your comments. You can give us a call, 503-231-8187. You can also write to us at the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AveandJoe. Also, you can tweet at us at HonestAbe72. So I want to start out the show this morning talking about the steps that the president has taken to make sure that he faces no consequences for his actions. And I
What is he doing now? What?
Well, I'm going to get into that. He's done quite a bit for quite a long time, as it turns out. And by quite a long time, I mean for pretty much his entire life. My armchair psychoanalysis, my admittedly amateur armchair psychoanalysis of the president, suggests that he never in his life has been forced to face the consequences of any of his actions. But there was always been...
They sent him to military school. That was good.
Yeah, that's from the military school. Okay, I take it back. Maybe that was the extent of it. I don't know. But he's never had to pay for his mistakes. He's gone bankrupt multiple times, you know, only to come back by slapping his name on something and selling it. I suppose there's a certain mean cunning that we can credit the president with, but certainly we can't credit him with being able to objectively evaluate his own actions and come to the conclusion that perhaps he misbehaved. I don't think he has that capacity.
No, I don't think he has much capacity for a rational and a moral thought.
No. Otherwise, he might have avoided such decisions as, colluding with the Russians to try and win an election.
Or perhaps having intimate relations with people who were in the sex trade.
All right, indeed. Or even letting a global pandemic rage unabated in his home country. There's all kinds of things. But anyway, this fits a pattern. And I want to talk about some of the things he's done more recently to immunize himself from the consequences of his actions. And it's not just the president now who is who's the subject of his machinations. It's all of us now. When the president of the United States works to immunize him or herself and acts criminally and irresponsibly, it's everybody who pays the price. And we're seeing that now. And we're seeing that measured in the thousands of unnecessary deaths that are taking place all over the country.
What used to be kind of an amazing sidebar to American history is now the main story. That is, people are dying, and it wasn't necessary in this numbers. And the president of the United States totally screwed up.
Totally screwed up. And in some cases, for reasons like vanity, just the most venal and selfish of reasons. But let me get into just exactly what I'm talking about. If we look farther back towards the beginning of the president's term, we see this pattern emerge almost immediately. The summoning of James Comey to the White House to swear a loyalty oath, the subsequent firing of Comey when he refused to take that loyalty oath.
Yeah, you don't see a president who, I don't think there's ever been a president who's directly attacked the FBI in this manner until Trump.
Right, precisely. And, that should be enough. In any set of normal circumstances or anything approaching normal, a move like that, the president firing the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation under a shadow of allegations circling around him and his inner circle. That should have been enough, you know, in any normal time for us to take decisive action against him. But unfortunately, these are anything but normal times. So the firing of Comey is an example of this early on that I think should have alerted us all to what was coming. When the CARES Act legislation, the coronavirus relief package, was passed, and in that legislation was included a $500 billion slush fund for the president to disperse to businesses that were needing help, Trump immediately announced in a signing statement that he was not going to abide by the oversight guidelines in that legislation, and in fact would not be appointing an inspector general to oversee that fund as the legislation called for. And I mentioned the inspector general because that's a recurring theme that I want to get to just right now. This past Friday night, the Trump administration announced the fourth firing in the past 6 weeks of an executive branch inspector general. This time it was the State Department's IG, Steve Linick.
You should explain what an inspector general does. I think many people may not understand.
Certainly. An inspector general is a highly placed figure within various departments of the executive branch. And, you know, usually these are pretty large departmental units. The State Department, for example, the Defense Department, so on. There might be smaller administrative units with their own inspectors general, but the purpose of the inspectors general is to make sure that the agency in question is acting according to the rules, is behaving legally and ethically, is not appropriating monies appropriating inappropriately. You like that?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, all sorts of things. Basically a referee. An inspector general is like a referee, okay? So back on the 3rd of April, on Friday night, the Trump administration fired State Department IG Steve Linick for reasons we will get into. But this fits a recent pattern, as I mentioned. Back on the 3rd of April, Trump fired the intelligence community Inspector General Michael Atkinson. This was in retaliation for Atkinson having done his job, which was to pass on a whistleblower complaint to Congress about the president's famous perfect phone call with the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. You remember that?
Yeah.
The president was impeached about it. You might remember that.
I think there was the president got impeached because of that.
Yes, he was in fact impeached. A week after that, he removed the acting Defense Department inspector, General Glenn Fine, who had been, this is the guy who was tasked with overseeing the $2 trillion pandemic relief fund. On the 2nd of May, the acting Health and Human Services Inspector General, Kristi Grimm, was removed by Trump after he learned that she wrote a report describing the severe shortages of personal protective supplies and equipment in hospitals around the country. So Trump told the press that her report, Kristi Grimm's report, was wrong and accused her of being an Obama partisan, even though she'd been serving in government for more than two decades under both Republican and Democratic administrations. So this is what's going on. Every time Trump faces oversight or accountability for his actions, the person in a position to exact consequences on him finds him or herself removed from their job. On one level, this is simply a thin-skinned, venal narcissist acting as we might expect such a person to act. Though in the context of leading the federal government of the United States, this becomes a guy systematically, well, systematically is too kind. It implies Trump is smart and he's not. So let's just say relentlessly moving anybody who has a chance of checking him for his behavior. And in the context of a free republic like ours, and I use that term advisedly, this should be very, very frightening to anybody who cares about the continued existence of that republic.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is an unprecedentedly frightening time. I can't recall. Now, my politics are clearly biased to the left, but I can't recall among any of the Republicans or Democrats in modern times where there was such a vanilla, I cannot say that word, such creepiness, such dishonesty, such attempt to self-serve as is exhibited by Trump and his administration.
Yeah, I mean, let's be very frank about what this is about. These are part, as I mentioned, of Trump's quest to make sure the law doesn't apply to him, and he's firing all these overseers so that he and his cronies can continue to steal taxpayer money and not get caught.
Yep.
I mean, that is what this comes down to at a very basic level. He and his friends are gutting the federal government, squeezing it for every drop of money they possibly can. And unless you think I'm being too broad with these criticisms, I have examples. I've got receipts. So this is going on. Show you the money. I mean, this goes on and on about high-ranking members of the administration. Remember EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, who spent all sorts of money traveling unnecessarily? He paid taxpayer money to have his office soundproofed, and he demanded around-the-clock security, including 18 agents on duty at all times. This is the EPA administrator, right?
Really?
And there was the Health and Human Services Secretary, Tom Price. He finally resigned after there were multiple investigations into his use of private charter and military planes to travel. You know, this goes on and on and on. Jared Kushner used his position to secure a business deal with a Chinese company. And some interventions on his behalf in the Middle East.
Kirsten is so cute, and he's married to such a cute daughter. It's all cute.
Yeah, they still look cute in their prison oranges, I think.
I think they'd look good in orange.
Yeah.
In fact, orange, if I recall, is the new black.
Indeed it is. Was that a pop culture reference, Joe?
That is a reference to a show that was on.
A pop culture reference. Okay, congratulations.
It's a pop culture reference, and don't beat me up for it.
You know, I could go on and on. The current HUD secretary, Ben Carson, who's somehow still in his job, was caught spending lavishly on office furniture.
How can you spend lavishly on office furniture?
He spent something like $30,000 for a massive desk.
Really?
Yeah. Here it is. He placed an order of $31,561 for tables and chairs for his office suite. And this far exceeded, of course, the legal limit for spending on such things by elected officials. But wherever you look at it in Trump's administration, this is the kind of thing that's been going on. Every time there's someone in a position to exercise oversight, they're gone. Every time there's somebody who might prevent Trump and his cronies from bleeding the government for more money, they're gone. This is banana republic stuff, Joe.
Yeah, it really is. It is a characteristic of what I would expect in a cartoon Little Abner version of the critique of Central America.
Yeah, that's very much the case.
Now, that's a good obscure reference, you got to admit.
Yeah. In this most recent firing, the firing of the Inspector General for the State Department, reportedly, was at the instigation of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, but because apparently Pompeo is very close to his wife, right? His wife brings his wife with him wherever he goes. When he was Director of Central Intelligence, apparently she had her own office adjacent to his, and had several CIA employees placed under her supervision, I guess, to do whatever it is she wanted them to do.
I'm getting scared of where you're going here. What does that mean?
Well, I really don't know what it means. I'm just pointing to a pattern of behavior on Pompeo's part.
To
bend the rules and to place his wife with supervisory authority over people she was in no position to have. So Pompeo now is the Secretary of State. The latest Attorney General firing or Inspector General firing happened because allegedly the IG was investigating Pompeo because he and his wife were forcing a government employee to act as his butler, you know, to attend to him at all times, that sort of thing.
Well, I would like a butler. I don't know what is the female or butler. I don't know. I would like a servant. I've never had a servant. I don't know how I'd handle that whole thing, but I'm sure it's the right sort of thing for anybody who's important and wise.
You know, I really think that you are probably a better person for not having a servant. And
I think I'm probably a better person for a lot of things, and that's just one small example.
Well, don't give yourself too much credit. But the servant thing, definitely. You're a better person for not having had a servant. And I'm going to go out so far as to suggest that nobody really needs a servant. That having a servant is perhaps evidence that one ought to evaluate one's life, and that perhaps maybe one had too much money. if one finds oneself in need of a servant.
You know, I'd like to try that, though, having too much money, that is.
You want to test it scientifically?
Well, yeah, sure? I think a scientific test with me as the subject would make good sense, and let's see how well or poorly I do with a lot of money.
This is the Abe and Joe Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. 503-231-8187 is the number. Right now, we're talking about the merits of having hired help. Joe's in favor. I am against. We're also talking about the
I've never
purge.
Hired help. Okay, go ahead.
I haven't either. We're also talking about the ongoing purge of anybody within the federal government in a position to exercise oversight against the president and members of his ministry.
Well, lest we be thought as too silly, this really is a very serious thing, and it is a very serious example of the incredible, what do you want to call it, the incredible degeneration of power and evil use of power by this administration.
Now, we should mention that this, what we're talking about now, this phenomenon would be bad enough if were it merely confined to the executive branch of the federal government. But it is not. As we mentioned earlier, the president, amongst all the other stuff that has happened during his short administration, was impeached. Only the third president in the United States history to be impeached. And he was impeached for something that was absolutely a cut and dried case, should, in a more perfect world, have led to his dismissal and eventually to his arraignment and trial on criminal charges. But of course, none of that happened because an entire branch of the federal government also acted to immunize the president from the consequences of his actions.
We have Harry on the line.
Well, let's take a pause and take a phone call, Joe. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do that.
Harry, good morning.
Hey, greetings, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. You were talking about Trump's spending, and I hope you don't forget, or maybe you go look up on your laptop, that he was going every weekend, he was going down to his estate in Florida. And it was costing over $1 million for him to go down there. The government had to pay for it. And if you start adding it up, I hope you can add it up for me. I think it's over $100 million now.
Well, I don't know the exact sum, but I know it's much, much more than any president has ever spent on his own personal travel for no reason of government.
Because early in his presidency, because he was mentioning how much he was complaining about how Obama used to play golf all the time, and then they start tallying that, well, gee, you're playing a lot more than Obama ever did in the first year of your presidency than Obama did for his whole term. But that's something that that he's spending money on. That's just,
well, since you brought this up, my perception is it isn't just that he doesn't like Obama because he was a Democrat or a liberal trying to do things that were blocked by Congress. It isn't that. It's the fact that he's an African American, and that was so obvious, starting with his attempt to suggest that Obama was born in Kenya, which had no validity whatsoever.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, the next question I have for you, both of you, yesterday was the 40th anniversary of Mount St. Helens blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you when the mountain blew?
Well, I don't think I want to spend much time with that, but I will say that I was with my family, and we got in the car, and we naively drove to see it. And I did see it. I saw lightning coming from the top of it. I didn't understand then what happens with heat and moisture in a volcanic situation. There were a lot of vehicles. We got as close as we could get, which wasn't that close, but there were people chanting and very religious and telling us, behold the might of God, which I thought was not really about it. I thought, hey, this is a pyroclastic event. But that's where I was. Where were you, Abe?
I was in California being a kid.
Oh,
I thought it was cool, though.
Yeah.
I remember watching it on the news with my folks.
Yeah, I lived by Woodlawn School, and it was a Sunday, and I remember seeing all these people gathering in the parking lot in the playground, and I says, what are they looking at? And you look at this mountain, and the Mount St. Helens blew. It was kind of eerie. It looked like the mountain. I don't know if you remember the TV show Gilligan's Island. It looks like the mountain on Gilligan's Island that was smoking. It was quite eerie,
Well, I mean, we're going to go into a weird digression, but my favorite volcano thing is when Mighty Mouse would use his jet trail to tie off a volcano and save all the mice from destruction by the cats. So let's drop this, though.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call. You know, I'd like to point out to our listeners, you know, that it's this high level of intellectual engagement, you know, recollections of Mighty Mouse cartoons and stuff, that keeps people tuning into the show. And if you like what you hear, I'd like to suggest making a contribution to KBOO at KBOO.fm.
This is not the best begging you've done. But yes, really, people, if you want this station to survive, and it's like many, many, many smaller operations in this country at this time, really does need your support. You really, really should. If you give, you know, $10, give $100, to give $100, give $1,000, and so on, because the station is an incredibly valuable resource, and it really does depend on you.
We have another caller, Cassandra.
Before we get to our next caller, I want to jump in on something that Harry mentioned, and that is the cost of Trump's golf outings. As it turns out, there's an entire website devoted to tabulating the cost of Trump's golf outings. It's called TrumpGolfCount.com. And the running total that they have is in excess of $133 million in taxpayer expenses in Trump's presidency.
You know, I heard that he was a guy who only drove a golf cart, and he would actually drive it onto the green, which is a real no-no in golf world.
Yeah, see, he never faces any consequences from his actions, even from his fellow golfers. I've also heard it reported, and from multiple sources, that Trump is an unbelievable cheater when he plays golf.
Really? Oh, no.
Yeah. Like that, he'll hit a ball, and he'll jump in the cart, and he'll drive ahead to get to his ball, and by the time the rest of his foursome or whatever gets there, all of a sudden his ball's sitting in a great position, you know, where
magic.
It didn't appear to be.
Magic.
It's magic, yeah. So let me go through some of these costs just very quickly. More than $59 million alone flying Air Force One to Mar-a-Lago. Almost $30 million in costs for guarding the coast off of Mar-a-Lago. And this might be more or less unexciting news in any other presidency, but the fact is that when Trump travels, he travels and he stays at properties that he owns, which means that you, the taxpayer, are paying top dollar to put up Secret Service agents for extended periods of time, Trump's whole retinue for extended periods of time. It's really pretty nauseating.
Yeah, it is. It's so immoral. It, from my perspective, makes me wonder who these people are who love Trump. Is it just that they are so angry in general that anything absurd and ugly like this pleases their sense of humor, or what?
Well, we get back to the old politics as tribal affinity. They don't mind because Trump plays for their team. They also don't mind because people like you and me get really pissed off when they read about things like this. They love that. There's also the fact, you know, that Trump's a racist, and they like that too.
Yep.
Let's go back to the phones.
Hi, this is Cassandra.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Two comments. One, there's a wonderful Japanese saying that translates loosely to something to the effect of how a person does one thing is how they do everything. And I think at this point we should not be surprised when we see keep uncovering more and more horrific things about this so-called president, which, by the way, I don't really like giving him that title. But everything he does and has done from day one, probably, of his existence has led to the person that he is now. But what I find more, so I'm not surprised by anything he does anymore. Shocked, mildly. But what I do find unsettling is the misplaced priorities of the American public, that we find it less important that this man is ripping us off, killing us in the hundreds of thousands. It will be there eventually. And yet we find that, and I am a total baseball fanatic, but that having sports is more important. Having hairdressing parlors is more important. We can put people back to work in necessary jobs, tracing and doing a lot of things, but we won't fund that. So I think it's the misplaced priorities of the American public over decades now, which I understand I'm a historian. I do understand. Yes, I actually have the degrees. But I understand how this has been grown, in a sense, over decades. But at the same time, I just find it amazing that we so easily are led down this path.
Well, I think we have a culture that is designed primarily to move goods in the marketplace. I mean,
right? It's the built-in obsolescence. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, look, big news.
We have to keep buying.
Ivory soap floats. You know, I mean, it's an insane culture.
Yes. And it's, but there comes a point where you have to. You can only blame, I'm older and I'm 58, and, you know, you get to the point where you understand you can no longer blame your parents for decisions you make, unless, of course, you are Trump. You can no longer blame society for the things going on around you because, well, unless you are Trump. You can no longer blame other people. You have to take responsibility for your own actions. And as a society, even with all the various ethnic cultures within our society, we have failed in this. We are not taking personal responsibility, I feel, which would keep us politically active, aware, and I think that is something that needs to be addressed massively. And I'll take my comments off the air, and thank you, gentlemen, very much for everything that you do.
Well,
thank you.
We appreciate the call. I think I'm caught in a kind of a intellectual bind here. I do understand that as a people, we have, in a system that is potentially actually a democracy, despite the overwhelming power of money and so on, that we are caught in this weird situation. We are a culture addicted to entertainment, and part of that entertainment, a large part, is advertising and commercial endeavor. And that locks us into a very odd kind of intellectual dilemma in which we don't expect reality, we don't expect truth, and we just expect entertainment, and it can become very, very dangerous.
We have Francis on the line.
I have some thoughts on that. I think we should go to Francis first. What do you think?
Okay.
All right, Francis.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. How are you doing? I know you mentioned today is primary day and we have to take our ballots. Are the libraries open? I know they were closed for a while because of the virus.
Oh, you know what? That's a very good point. I mentioned earlier that
right.
You can take ballots.
You might have to go to the elections
down
office.
Street down there in the southeast.
You know what? I'm going to try and find out. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Otherwise, you have to take your ballot to the elections office on Southwest Morrison. I mean, not Southeast Morrison.
I'm pretty sure that's correct. I think that's what we should advise people to do. And maybe there'll be a crowd of cars and a guy or a gal out there to take your ballot.
There always is.
Cool.
There always is, yeah.
They'll probably have a mask.
Also, today is Malcolm X's birthday. He would be 95 years old today.
Oh.
And there are some online events going on, I understand, to celebrate his birthday and also to speak on issues that he spoke on many moons ago that are quite relevant today, which is unfortunate. This man that we keep talking about that's in the White House right now, it's kind of amazing to me how people spend a lot of time talking about everything that he is doing that is an abuse of power, and it's almost as if he's already king. We've already given him that. And I think you started to talk about how that can only happen because our Senate has allowed it to happen.
Well, I think this is an important point. Francis, I just want to support you in this. I think it's a very weird situation where we have a Republican Party, an entire party in the Senate, which now is slavishly supporting this this fascist pretender, and it's kind of shocking. It's kind of shocking. I never saw I never saw it with the Bushes. I never saw it with Eisenhower. I never saw it with a lot of people who were Republicans.
Right.
This is a new, horrible kind of fascist Republican.
It is really amazing to me that those people, you know, we speak about how the American people are falling for his nonsense. However, these people who are politicians, and that is their business, and it is their job to represent the people, are allowing this to occur. And it's appalling to me. And, you know, there were some Congress people like Maxine Waters and Representative Green from Texas who from the very start wanted to impeach the man, because as you said, we already knew what he was and how he is and what he does, but they were dismissed as being partisan or political, but they knew and they saw what he is. And for him to be allowed to remain there is frightening to me, that our Senate has become so partisan, or actually probably they've become more like corporate surrogates, and they will allow this to occur in order to keep making the money. And that inspector general that was fired, I know I finally got to see how gaslighting really works, when everyone is talking about how he was fired because he was investigating Pompeo's use of a staffer for walking his dog and, you know, doing the dishes or whatever. Mm-hmm. When actuality, it was because of they were trying to get around the Congress's ruling about arms to Saudi Arabia.
Yes, that was
it. No, in fact, that's really an important point. Mm-hmm. We can make criticism about the pettiness of it, but the fact of the matter is, while Saudi Arabia is destroying the people to the south of them, we are giving them the weapons to do that, and it's really a shock.
And our Congress already had a passed legislation to curb, to not allow certain sales to Saudi Arabia, but Pompeo is going around that. And that is what the inspector general was inspecting. It wasn't the use of his staffer to walk the dog. But now the gaslighting has occurred, and I finally saw its workings and how you know, how the master gaslighter there, the art of the gaslighting, when they talk about this use of a staffer when it's really not about that at all. It's about...
No, you're right to call us out on that, Francis. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, Francis, right. I'm glad you call, and I hope you keep on calling, and I appreciate your insights.
All right, you guys take care.
Okay. Yay, thank you, Francis. You too.
Chris is on the line.
All right, I have learned that you can still drop your ballots off at Multnomah County Library location. If there's nobody there, you can put your ballot in the 24-hour book drop box.
Oh, good for you. You got the facts out there.
Yes, there's also a number of other drop-off sites that are located at both public and private locations. You can find that full list at multco.us/drop sites.
Well, I hope that people will vote. You know, it's sort of weird. Local elections, which dominate this thing, this time there are so many candidates. A lot of people may become bewildered and dismayed and not vote at all, but I think there really are... there are better and worser people running for offices, and I think local elections are the key to building a national consensus to make things better, and I hope everyone does vote.
Indeed. I want to follow up on something you mentioned right before Francis's call.
Okay.
And that was talking about what the Republican Party has become in terms of you know, serving as Trump's beard and allowing him to operate unfettered in his current job. I think it's really important to note a couple of things. First of all, Trump is not the disease here. Trump is a symptom of an underlying rot that has existed in the American body politic really since before the founding of the Republic. And it has manifested itself in many different ways over the ensuing centuries. But in terms of its more modern incarnation, I think you need to look back to the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980. Ronald Reagan and his electoral triumph, not only in 1980, but his overwhelming re-electoral triumph in 1984, I think, scared the bejesus out of the Democratic Party. In particular, a strategist by the name of Al Frome. Are you familiar with Mr. Frome?
No. Well, I do remember the name. But
do you remember the name? Anyway, a Democratic insider in the 1980s who came up with the idea that the Democratic Party needed to be radically remolded in something out of the something in the Ronald Reagan vein. Otherwise, they would be facing electoral defeat stretching into the future for God knows how long. Basically, Frome is the guy who was responsible for remaking the Democratic Party into the corporate light, center-left shadow of the former progressive force that it used to be. And all of this was because they saw Reagan as having won the debate of the day, that markets were the solution to our problems, that you can no longer, as a viable political party, put a lot of money into social programs. That was no longer an option for the Democrats. And that's the model that they have followed going forward, and that thinking persists to this day. Now, the great irony of all this is that given that the Democratic candidate who finally wrested executive control back from Republicans, I'm talking about Bill Clinton in 1992, is straight out of this Reagan-molded, conservative-like framework that was the new Democratic Party. And the irony is that he should have been the perfect crossover candidate for the Republican Party to work with, because he really represented all of their most important values. Primacy of the free market, lower taxes on the rich, disinvestment in social programs and infrastructure, all these things. He was the perfect Democrat for Republicans to work with and solidify their hold on power for God knows how long. But you know what? They turned on him. And this is, I'm getting this from an interesting analysis I just read by a guy named Jared Yates Sexton. He postulates that when Hillary Clinton came forward with her healthcare reform plan in the early 1990s, that initially the Republicans were on board and willing to work with her, but they perceived the fact that this was a political winner for the Democrats. So despite the fact that they were willing to work with her, they knew that if she won, if healthcare was actually reformed under the Clinton administration, that that would translate into Democratic electoral wins stretching into the future. So what did they do? They closed ranks, and they reinforced the classist and racist polarization that Reagan's election had started to crystallize. They moved away from a centrist, corporate-friendly candidate and instead framed him as the farthest left political figure you could possibly imagine. And that framework for
a murderer.
And that framework for evaluating Democrats has persisted to this day. Even a guy like Barack Obama, who was very much, I think, in the Clinton mold, all that does not describe him or his politics in totality. In other words, another guy with whom the Republicans could work was demonized as the farthest left candidate and you could possibly imagine. So what does all this have to do with Trump? That polarization has only widened over the years. That racial entrenchment has only deepened over the years to the point where we are now, where they're willing to countenance a guy like Trump in office. A guy who's clearly unfit, he's mentally unstable, he is avaricious, he is capricious, he is venal, he is vain, he is a narcissist, and he's clearly acting in nobody's interest but his own, but they're willing to give him all the cover he needs all day long because that's what the party has become. It is the party of Trump. It is no longer the party of traditional conservative ideology, no longer the party of property rights, of civil liberties, of fiscal discipline. All those things are gone. All that's left is a reactionary white nationalist rump. That is the Republican Party. And they are all in for Trump because he is what they have created for the last 40 years. End of rant.
No, it was a pretty good rant. I agree with it. I do think, you're a little harsh on Barack Obama. I think he steadily modified himself toward the center. You know, if you don't like my singing, I'll lower my voice until you do. That's something like that. And I think that it was unfortunate, and I don't think he had much of a choice. They were out to get him from get-go, and Trump was one of the leaders of the vicious attack, I might add. And the fact of the matter is that Obama is pretty intelligent, pretty aware person, a pretty good human being. He's probably one of the, in history will probably look at him as one of the finer people in office. I just wanted to say
you
that.
You might be right about that. Yeah, you know, they were out for Obama from the very beginning. But I submit that they would have been after whomever may have been in Obama's place if Obama had never won the nomination.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's all about the contest and all about power. It's not at all about ideology or beliefs or notions of progressive or reactionary politics.
Indeed. And the fact that Obama was black did make their heads explode. That's an important factor here, and one that simply cannot be left out of the equation, one that really cannot be overestimated. The fact that a black man ascended to what was the rightful province of white guys, that was unforgivable. That's when we saw the Tea Party start to emerge. That's when all of a sudden it became fashionable to be a racist out in public again, after many years of it being rightfully pushed off to the side. All of this started really rising into public view under the Obama administration, and Trump simply stepped in and rode the crest of that wave to an electoral victory. And if you factor in some structural inequities and advantages placed there by the Constitution, then all of a sudden you have Trump's improbable presidential victory.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I from the very beginning, when Trump had pictures of the empty inaugural crowd, nobody there to see him be inaugurated, and proclaimed, had his people proclaim that it was the biggest crowd ever. And people were either willing to suspend reality or allow that to go down. But that was the first, for me, clear sign of the way in which reality had been twisted and destroyed by this administration from the get-go.
Right. And, you know, if you're wondering, how deep does this tribal division go? How deeply do these symbols resonate? Well, just look at what's happening in the country right now. There is an entire subset of the American populace right now who refuses to wear masks or face coverings in public, refuses to look after the public health, refuses to safeguard the health of even people in their own families and their own tribal units. Why? Because wearing that mask is a symbol of the other side. It is a symbol of rationality, and to them, a symbol of weakness and degeneracy. So, better to get sick and die of this horrible respiratory disease than to be seen in public wearing the symbol of the weak libs.
Well, I think it goes beyond that. I think there's a deep-seated distrust for science, for rationality, for reasonable thought that has always run its course in American politics. And it doesn't take much of an analysis to recognize it and to see where it suddenly appears and gains favor. And right now, there is, I don't know what the number
is. Hey, well, thanks for dismissing my analysis. I appreciate that.
Well, now, don't take it all so hard. You'll be okay.
I'm teasing you. But it's the thing we need to realize is that it's a death cult. It amounts to a death cult. And it's not just now because of COVID-19. Consider the issue of gun violence, for example. It has been crystal clear for decades and decades in this country that the continued unfettered access to and use of firearms is going to result in the unnecessary deaths of thousands of Americans every year. This has been an acceptable price for people on the other side of the political equation. Better to have my freedom to a gun than to have communities enjoy a freedom from being shot. And the cost of that is measured in lives. It is a death cult, and now we're seeing it today. Better to have thousands of extra people die so that we can reopen an economy because I need a haircut, damn it. Better to have that than to be forced by the oppressive hand of government to stay in my house and watch cable TV and play video games. Oh, the oppression! When will we be free of the boot of government?
Okay, Abe, have you completed the rant?
I have, but I really want our listeners to realize this. This conservatism in the United States today is a death cult. They have been doing the math for decades, and they are just fine with thousands of people dying every year so that they can continue to express this their own version of the zeitgeist through their politics and through their actions.
Well,
they're just fine with people dying.
No, and I agree with you. And I am reminded, though there's not a direct, obvious relationship, of the decision by the Nazis to use a skull as the symbol of their most elite troops.
Yeah. Yeah.
The death symbol.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So, well, okay, now I'm rolling truly done with my rant.
Okay. I don't think anything you said is untrue or wrong, by the way. I think that one of the things that is puzzling to me is the way in which people right now, liberals, conservatives even, are lost about what to do in this coming election. They are very much angry, and rightfully so, that there cannot be a liberal or, gosh, a leftist candidate on one side and a conservative candidate on the other in the national elections. And the fact of the matter is, there can't. The structure is set up the way it is. But this is a unique deviation from even the most bizarre behavior of the Bushes or others. This is frighteningly fascist, and we must do everything we can, I believe, to stop this, even at the price of having kind of a dull president.
Well, that was rousing. That was a stirring call.
I know that'll move everybody to vote. Anyway, I think we're really in very serious trouble in a lot of levels here. And I think one of the biggest challenges, and we'll be talking about this probably into the election period, is to deal with the fact that we're going to have to have a support. I believe we absolutely have to have support for the mediocre against the horrible fascist. And that's a bad bargain, and I don't know what else you can do. And I'm really very frightened for the American people.
What do you think is going to happen?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no idea. I can't believe that people would vote again for Trump. And I was very moved, actually, not by the brilliance of it, but by the brilliance of having that public graduation ceremony with Obama making a short talk. I thought that was really nice. I think it was on all the channels. It was on all TV. It would be hard to miss it. You could ignore it, but it was even in the news. And I thought, this is a good beginning of a populist movement without having to be so harshly rooted in the social changes that you or I would like. It's enough to say, let's get rid of the clown. Kill the clown.
That's just it, though. It's
maintain the rule of law. Maintain a system of government that is rational. Don't let this take over.
It's not even close to enough simply to get rid of the clown, though. That's the problem. Joe Biden is not the man for the moment right now. Although, you know, I'm hearing the right sort of noises from his campaign. But
well, let's not make. It's a little early to make a judgment about that. I think I understand what you're saying. He would not have been my choice. I liked Elizabeth Warren. You know, nobody ever asked me, but I thought she was rational. And she had a plan for that, and I really am sad that that there's a lack of a real power there. I'm hoping that who he selects for his vice president will be someone. It's going to be a woman. Will be someone who represents good thought, good intention, good ideas, and a desire to really work through all of these things.
Yeah, less important in my mind than his vice presidential selection is some of the things I've been hearing recently. There was an article in the New York Times, not the New York Times, but the Atlantic, talking about how Biden is envisioning an FDR-scale presidency.
Really?
Yes, that's what he's envisioning is necessary to get the country out of the economic chasm that the COVID-19 epidemic has opened up.
Well, it's
and also,
true.
Yes,
that's
also,
correct.
Right, but it doesn't stop there, if I understand what he and his campaign are envisioning. It doesn't stop with the COVID-19 epidemic. There is the climate change catastrophe to address. There is the deficit of infrastructure and deferred maintenance that needs to be addressed in the country. There's radical reforms to our educational system. There is a pressing need to reestablish some sort of standardization and normalcy and fairness in our electoral system. And it's my understanding that Biden is conceiving of a presidency that acts aggressively on all these fronts. Now,
well,
whether or not that's
the need for health care. We need a national health care.
Well, right. Yes. I'm sorry. I left that out of my summation. Whether or not this is just, you know, the campaign making the right kinds of noises to appeal to liberals remains to be seen. But I am encouraged to hear his campaign saying things like this. The other very encouraging thing I've seen coming out of the Biden camp is the fact that he has appointed a number of small task forces led by very capable and intelligent people to address these various things. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for example, is leading his climate task force. Pramila Jayapal from Washington State is involved as well. A lot of really smart, really progressive people he is drawing in to work with him even now. And again, it remains to be seen whether or not this is just you know, some raw meat being thrown to the liberals. We'll see. But it is nonetheless encouraging.
No, I think it's real. I think it's a situation that calls for heroic revolutionary thought. And I think that even Biden, an older guy with a bent toward a certain kind of conservatism and style, even he recognizes the need for these things. And I think a lot of people, certainly in the Democratic Party, certainly some of the younger people in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, see that need. And I'm suspecting that a lot of Americans see it as well. So all is not lost. It's really now going to be a case of getting, of focusing attention, not just on getting rid of the Trump, but on creating a system which guarantees health care, which deals with the climate, and I can go on and on and on.
Yeah, indeed. So, yeah, we'll see. This is going to be, it seems like we say this ahead of every election, but this is the most consequential election that's come around in a long time.
We have two callers.
Yeah, we got a lot of callers. Let's try to do some callers.
All right. Who do we have?
Yep.
Oops.
You're lying to us, man.
Do we have a caller?
Okay, try Robbie.
Okay, Robbie, good morning.
Hey, I just wanted to tell people really quickly, I have this thing whenever I vote on the ballots here, when there's an uncontested race, if you don't know that person, you know, it's just like one name and then, you know, you have the option to write in, mm-hmm. right? What I tell people to do is not to vote unless they know the person they're voting for, because that's actually shunting possible grassroots movements for people who might not have been able to get in the pamphlet, people who didn't get listed on the ballot. So when you're voting, don't vote for that one name that you don't know. You don't have
to. Well, I agree. Hey, vote for yourself. What the hell?
Oh, I actually write in Oprah Winfrey and, you know, Godzilla for fun, and then I, you know, vote like that. But I just
Well, Oprah Winfrey and Godzilla? Wait a minute.
Well, I mean,
I got your idea, man.
I don't want to suppress, you know, a possible movement that I'm not aware of, right?
What, the monsters from the atomic age? I don't know. Okay, never mind.
You know,
I'm willing to listen to arguments in favor of Godzilla at this point.
All right. Well, hey, I wanted to finish up with this too. Joe, I believe you were wrong about saying Obama eventually went more center. From the very beginning when he got elected, actually, he had, I believe it was Citigroup, vetted his cabinet. He went after whistleblowers. I mean, you know, obviously he drank the Flint water, Michigan, when it wasn't safe, telling people that it was. So I don't trust the Democrats. It's Malcolm X's birthday. And one of the things that Malcolm X said is the Republicans aren't the most dangerous politicians. It's the Democrats who are lying to us, get our votes, and then are still against us. And so what you just basically had said is like, well, is this all, you know, smoke and mirrors? Did you know that Ilhan Omar just voted for the AIPAC Iranian sanctions, which she was very vocally against in February?
Yeah, I did hear about that.
It's disappointing.
So what?
Yeah, I wonder though if Malcolm X might not have a different view of today's Democrats and Republicans than he did of those of his time.
He would be.
Against, I don't know.
He would be even more against Democrats. I've read a lot of his work. I don't even think he would have voted for Obama. I think he would have been
I have to say something. There is a tendency, all of us, particularly people on the left, fall into this category. We want to see the right kind of people in office, and we want to see the right kind of politics. We're not going to get to see the right kind of politics in America at this moment. What we have to stop right now and recognize the real danger of it absolutely, is what happened, and I'm going to have to say this, in Nazi Germany. People underestimated fascism. They didn't understand how it worked, and they didn't understand how it linked with the ruling class. They didn't understand a lot of things that needed to be understood. The result was a disaster. This is that time in this culture, and I have to say that.
Well, let's see. Let's examine the Nazis. The Reichstag fire is what started that, and that was actually through the media, which is propagating lies and conspiracy theories to the media.
Listen to me. Fascism is the problem now. We got to deal with it. There's many other very important things that need to be dealt with. The mean, nasty reality of Donald Trump has got to be stopped.
All right.
We've got to stop it at the polls.
I'll finish with this final comment, if you don't mind. I want to finish with one final comment, if you don't mind. You brought up all of the earlier stuff that Donald Trump did. Obviously, I mean, it doesn't take even a lawyer to realize that he broke the Emoluments Clause, and there's all these other impeachable offenses. Why is it that Nancy Pelosi waited until the last...
Hey, man, listen, beating up on the Democrats doesn't matter now. Right now, and I think this is really important.
I'm asking you a question. Why do you think Nancy Pelosi waited until the final year of this election cycle to push forward something that isn't even that, it's not even holding up in court? Why didn't they go
because
after something
the
more
system
serious?
Is absolutely corrupt. That's not the issue here. The issue
corruption is a part on the Democrats.
Than our regular system.
The corruption is part on the Democrats, too, and you're failing to acknowledge that. And I think that's what created the fascist state that we're in.
I think we're going to have to agree to disagree because we are out of time for this week.
We actually ought to have a long, serious discussion about this because I'm very concerned that people, very good people with good analysis, are going to sit on their hands and let this fascist clown win again. I'm really scared of that.
You mean Joe Biden?
I'm scared about that, too. It's coming from all right, hey, thanks everybody who took part in today's show. We really appreciate your contribution. As always,